Welcome to The Bookshelf. I'm Nancy Roth. A week of readings from Shorty's Yarns, The Cowboy Tales of Bruce Kiskaden. His cowboy poetry is still wildly popular and performed in the circles of that popular art form. But the stories lay buried until Bill Seams found one of them in a library volume of an old Western livestock journal. Further diligent research resulted in a beautifully produced book, Shorty's Yarns, published by the Utah State University Press. It includes many of the excellent pen and ink drawings by Catherine Field that originally accompanied the poems and stories, as well as a great deal of biographical material on Kiskaden. Let's cheer ourselves up with Shorty's Yarns.
Waddies like Bill and Shorty didn't make a lot of money, but they had style, and they thought that they were a cut above. That was kind of a comment, too, on this story, which is Bill visits a married friend, that the regular cowwaddies like Shorty and Bill, they didn't make much money, but they had a very strong sense of style. And they figured that they were a cut above the herd. The herd, not just their animals, but the herd being the herd of farmers and hay tossers and ditch diggers and stuff like that. So that matter of keeping that style is important. And that's kind of what happens. Something to do with this story. Bill visits a married friend. Certainly had to do with clothing, boots, hats in particular. But all manner of clothing, that was a important issue. And then all your gear, your saddle, well made and good to look at. And so even though they had little money, what there was went in large part to keeping the style up. And you know, Bill had been recovering at home, trying to get over his massage. We hadn't been on the work many days till here comes Bill riding into camp one evening. He seems to be in a good humor, although he still rode sort of light on his saddle and set over on one leg quite a bit. After supper, he goes away from the fire and sets down by himself, and I knowed he had something heavy on his mind that he wanted to get rid of. So I eases over to where he was. We both rolls up a smoke, and then Bill, he thaws out and begins, "Shorty," he says, "it's a terrible thing to be married." "Well," I says, "it's most generally a man's own fault if he's married, and it's most generally a man's fault if he don't get along with his woman." "How come?" asks Bill. "Well," I says, "most every cowwaddy I ever met up with tuck right out after every woman he ever seen, and if she got out of sight, he run her by the dust, and if that give out, he took to cold tracking her. Then, too, if he didn't get her, you can bet it ain't his fault. But if he don't get along with her, it's because he don't know how to pick 'em, or else he don't know how to get along with 'em after he's got 'em." "You ain't gone and got yourself spliced, have you, Bill?" "No," says Bill. "But I've been and seen a feller that has. You hear me tell about that feller Ed Jones I knowed up in the high country? Ed was sure a top hand. But he got married about 5 years ago. I heard Ed was sure doing fine, so I reckon while I was crippled up, I'd ride over and visit with him for a few days. I went over and stayed one night, and I come right back to the home ranch and got me some hosses and leaked out for this wagon. I tell you, Shorty, that 5 years of being married will ruin the best hand that ever sat in a saddle. I'd been told how to get to Ed's place, so I know when I ride up onto the hogback and look into the valley that I'm looking right at Ed's spread. It looks right good, for he has a lot of alfalfa and beans and a mighty nice orchard and garden and a bunch of milk cows grazing around. I rides in and there seems to be hogs and chickens around, and there is some of that square underwear hung out on the wash line, so I reckons there must be a young Ed or Edney about. I rides out and gets off in the corral and figures I'll look around and see if Ed's saddle is there, in which case I'll know Ed is somewhere as close about. I sees a couple saddles, one of them good looking. But away back on the manger of an empty stall in the shed, I see Ed's saddle. The same old double rig he rode 5 years ago. But what a saddle. There was no rope nor slicker on it, and the flank cinch was gone and had been robbed of all the wangs that had ever been on it. There was no sign of saddle blankets, and you had only to look once and see that the chickens had been setting on that old hull a heap more than what Ed had. Way down in the field, I sees a feller working in a ditch, and he sure is a-humping himself over a long-handled shovel. I mopes down there, and what do you suppose? It's Ed. And what a Ed. He has on a pair of loose, faded overalls that's all patched and big brogan shoes, and Shorty, I hope to die if he didn't have on a straw hat and galluses. He was sure glad to see me, and I helped him get the box fixed into the ditch while he told me how well he'd done since he got spliced up. For it seems his wife had been willed the place where they was, and they was making it pay in good shape. Long about dark, a young feller drives up in a wagon, and after he puts his team away, he saddles up a hoss and goes for them milk cows. Another feller by the name of George that's working for Ed goes and gets some buckets, and when the boy gets there with his cows, Ed tells me it is his cousin Homer. Well, Ed and George and Homer starts wringing the milk out of them cows right now. Then they goes into a sort of dugout and gets some more milk and feeds a whole passel of calves and a mob of hogs. By that time it is dark and we goes into the house. The wife and her aunt are there and two kids. The kids was both asleep, but somebody had give the oldest one a pup that's under the front porch and howling plenty loud. The biscuits was burned on the outside and raw in the middle, and the taters had the same complaint. The meat and the coffee would sort of do. The women folks blamed it onto the stove. They said it wouldn't draw. Did you ever see a stove that suited a woman? No, sir. You can take an old stove from a ranch house or line camp that 40 men has cooked on with grace and ease and let a woman get a hold of it, and what? Every man that comes along, she has him taking down the pipe and rebuilding the chimney and fixing the damper and cleaning out the soot. And then she says that none of them didn't fix it so that it would work right. And take some old hoss that has got along with a whole herd of men, and as soon as a woman gets a hold of him, he takes to running back and turning short and upsetting the old buggy and halter pulling, maybe so balking. Why, it take even a dog that women folks gets to messing with, and he ain't no account. No, sir. The only thing that ain't got too much sense to work for a woman is a man. He's the only animile that's just that dumb. Well, Bill, I says, seems to me like Rildy Briggs done a heap better job handling a couple of dogs than what you did. Bill gets huffy and allows that it was her fault that he had that ruckus with them dogs, and I sees right off that I better keep still if I want to hear the rest about Ed. Bill makes another smoke and goes on with his yarn. Well, he says, that pup under the porch howls all night, and the two kids takes turns howling when they wasn't both howling at once. And every now and then, half the family was up and tromping around to try and get what the kids wanted. I tried to sleep out under the shed with my saddle blankets, but they wouldn't hear to it and shut me up in a room where all I could do was sweat and listen. Next morning, Ed and George was up and milking the cows before the crow jumped, and Homer wrangled the pasture. He corrals my old hoss in the work stock and puts his saddle hoss in the corral and ties him to the fence with his reins. And it costs the first hoss that crowds between him and the fence breaks both reins. Ed knowed better than to let the kid do that away, but seems like he ain't got no ideas working in his head at all. The women folks is out and hollering for somebody to chop wood, and so I chops it, which, by the way, I ain't particular to. The breakfast ain't so bad as the supper, but it ain't nothing to cheer about. I helps Homer hitch up and load a plow and scraper onto a wagon, and Ed hitches up a team of mules to ferry out his beans. And when they get ready to turn out, I catches out my hoss and open the gate. I gets my bridle, but the reins is gone. I asked Ed if he knowed where they was. Why, you ain't leaving already, Ed says. But I told him I'd only stopped to say hello, for I had to get my hosses and meet the work. George speaks up and says, why, Homer reckoned that you'd be here for a spell, and he took your reins to tail out his line so they'd be long enough for the plow and scraper. Ed offered to get him for me, but I tells him I'll make out with a couple of hogging strings. Why, Bill, I says, looking at his reins, you got a crackerjack headstall and split latigo reins. What more would you want? Sure, says Bill, I left him my old headstall and took the hind latigo off in his saddle and split it for reins just to get even. My new Navajo saddle blanket is missing. Them women has throwed it over a chicken coop and drove a nail in each corner to keep it from blowing away. When I goes to take it, they hollers at me to wait a minute and brings out a couple of gunny sacks to keep the sun off of them young chickens. Law sakes, says the aunt, we allows you was going to be here for a spell and wouldn't want that old blanket no way. Bill, I says, you didn't steal no diapers for saddle blankets, did you? Bill, he allows you didn't, and then he goes on. Yes, sir, Shorty, they makes me wait till they fix me a lunch before they let me go. I tells him so long and rides away, plumb glad to be out of that mess. When I gets on top of the hogback, I stops and takes a look, and there's Ed in the distance, follerin' his team and plow. He stops and takes off one brogan and pours the dirt out of it and puts it back on and starts plowin' again. It's sure terrible to be married and prosperous. About noon, I stakes my hoss on a patch of good grass and gets the lunch out of my slicker, and it was sure good. Good biscuits and bacon and eggs. It was wropped up in the county newspaper, and I read that my friend Ed Jones is likely to run for road supervisor. And I says to myself, poor Ed, he'd better run for somewheres. Bill stops talking and makes another smoke. The boys is turning in. Over in the distance, you could hear the nighthawk singing, oh, beat the drums lowly and play the fife slowly. Bill says, Shorty, there's going to be a dance at the Rock Creek Schoolhouse a week from Saturday night, and this work will just about meet it. But Bill, I says, if you go, you'll have to dance with them terrible women that you ain't got no use for. I know that as well as you do, says Bill. But what are you going to do? The Rock Creek Dance. There was a feller on the work reppin' for some Nestor outfits, and we called him Uncle Jasper. Now it was sort of told around that he had two awful good-lookin' nieces. And Bill, he cottoned right up to that old feller. Seems like he had come along with his brother's family from up north about a year before, and he was a sure good cowman. He had one leg a heap shorter than the other one, but he seemed to get about pretty good anyhow. Come time for Jasper to pull out with his throwback, Bill, he talks the boys into letting him go along and side him. Bill, I says, don't go. Stay with the outfit and you won't get into no trouble. How would I get into trouble? Bill wants to know. I sure tells him that he ain't went no place that I know of but what he got in trouble. And seeing he and the old step-and-a-half feller is good friends, he'd better let it go at that. But no use, Bill. He rides off next morning with old Jasper. When Bill gets back from that trip, he's fuller to talk than an auctioneer. He tells me how he spent the day at the old man's place and that his oldest niece, Mandy Jane, was sure a scrumptious-looking gal. How he showed a pet pony for the gals, and that Uncle Jasper had sent off to Sears Roebuck for a suit of store clothes, and that him and Mandy Jane fixed them up. Fix them up, I asks. Sure, says Bill. We tuck and cut the one pants leg short so's it would fit right. We was sure smart about it, too. We tuck and laid a pair of his old pants over the new ones to get the measure right. Mandy Jane mighty nigh forgot to allow for the hem, but I thought of it. And then I cuts the leg off with my old marking knife. We sure had a good time that day. Well, Bill, I says, if you've done all that and never got into no trouble, you have sure improved a heap. Come time for the Rock Creek dance, me and Bill was a little behind the rest getting started. We gets there and Bill says, why, there's Ed Jones' mule team and four spring seats in the wagon. The whole outfit must be here. Yes, sir. There's him and Cousin Homer in there and Mandy Jane and her sister. Why, there's Rildy Briggs dancing with Cousin Homer, and Uncle Jasper is in there in his working clothes. I looks in at the winder, too, and there's Rildy dancing with a big double-jointed toe-headed Hoosier. And old Jasper is standing around in his working clothes. I pulls Bill away from the winder. Bill, I says, how did you lay them pants when you cut the leg off? Why, come to think of it, they was facing each other, he says. Then his mouth falls open and he looks wild. My God, he says, I cut the wrong leg off. Bill, I says, me and you has come a long way to this here dance, but the best thing we can do now is for me and you to leak out from here and say nothing to nobody. You are bad enough alone, but that there Rildy Briggs is down in these parts, and you and her never got together yet, but what you stirred up some sort of ruckus. But he allows I'm all fussed up over nothing at all, and goes a-tromping into that there schoolhouse like he was the most welcome human that ever learnt to walk on his hind legs. We stands by the door till the set is over, and then Bill makes for Mandy Jane. She turns her head and looks the other way. Bill gets red in the face and starts over to Rildy. Bill, I says, stop, stop. But he pulls loose from me and goes ahead. Cousin Homer is still leading Rildy around by the elbow, and they stops and gives Bill a dirty look. Still, I can't pull him away. And he walks right up and says, hello, Homer. Hello, Rildy. Enjoying yourselves? I give up and backed away. We was till you come tromping in here, says Rildy. But any feller that gets so low down that he takes to stealing bridles and cutting up his neighbor's clothes just trying to be smart ain't got no place in decent company, if you ask me. I ain't asking you nothing, Bill says, but if I did, I bet you could tell me everybody's business but your own. And any gal that would steal a feller's clothes just to see him run around plumb naked. Bill never got no further, for Rildy slapped him so hard his face twisted. Bill got so white that his lips looked black, but he kept from hitting Rildy, which was a wonder to them that knowed Bill's temper. But right then, Cousin Homer butts in. If I wasn't on the committee that's given this dance, I'd invite you outside, he says. Don't let that stop you, says Bill. I can lick you right here in the house. You try it, says Homer. Man, that was like hitting a dynamite cap with a hammer. Bill, he tore in like a raving lunatic. But what I took to lick that big corn-fed boy was a plenty. Everybody was yelling something, and I got a handful of smoking tobacco ready for any special occasion as might arise. And sure enough, up brushes that there Ed Jones, and he is aiming to get in a haymaker on Bill, so I slings the tobacco into his eyes, and he grabs his face and begins to paw like a dog that got a mouthful of hot corn mush. George, his hired man, makes a rush at me, but he was awkward as a pet bull, and I sidesteps and gives him a shove, and he lands over again the wall amongst a lot of women folk and upset benches. Mandy Jane, she starts screaming, and Homer, he looks to see what's eating on her, and that is the end of the fight, for Bill, he gets in one of them swings that he fetches up from the floor and about 3 feet behind, and lands it on poor Homer's jaw, and he goes out as cold as the front quarter of Armour's beef. Bill whirls around with his dukes up, and his elbow hits Rildy in the neck, and down she goes. Somebody hollers that Bill has hit a woman, and Bill gets out of there. I grabs his hat off the floor and beat him to our horses by about 2 jumps. We say nothing and string out for camp on a high lope, But before we've gone half a mile, Bill's hoss steps in a dog hole and goes rolling, and Bill, he lays there with the wind knocked out of him. The old hoss gets up and stands looking at us, and pretty soon Bill gets up and tries to walk, but he's limping terrible. "Oh, Lord," he says, "my right leg is sure hurt bad, but the bones ain't busted." We makes it back to camp, and the other boys comes a-riding in about daylight. Bill rolls out of bed, and he gets around mighty slow, and his face and hands is all scun up. When the remuda comes in, he gets out and ropes the gentlest hoss in his string. The boss watches him limping around, and then he busts out laughing and says, "Bill, one of two things. Either you're going to die young, or else you're going to get awful tough."
We've been hearing a reading from Shorty's Yarns, the Western stories and poems of Bruce Kiscadden, with illustrations by Catherine Field, published by the Utah State University Press. They were read by the book's editor, Bill Seams. The music you're hearing is by that same Bill Seams with Ted Hensold from their album, The Educated Fellers. The Bookshelf is a production of Spokane Public Radio. Series producer and editor is Vern Windham. I'm occasional producer Nancy Roth.
And then one day, when he was in here to read some of Shorty's stories, Bill brought along an instrument and decided to give us one of the songs, too.
Record another little bit.
Sure.
When first I was a buckaroo, I asked the old hands what to do. I heard the same thing all around, set and leg your feet hang down. When you drive and drag a riding lead, trying to turn a night stampede, if a bronco comes unwound, set and let your feet hang down. If your old hoss bucks so high that he wipes his tail in the morning sky, he'll never put you on the ground if you set and let your feet hang down. If you're sitting on a fence and you hear some talk that don't make sense, don't lose your head or make a sound, just set and let your feet hang down. When you drive and drag a riding lead, trying to turn a night stampede, if a bronco comes unwound, set and let your feet hang down. In jail and the boss ain't there to go your bail, wait till he comes to town, just sit and let me hang down. Now what the old hand said was true, although at times it's hard to do. It takes a right good man I've found to sit and let his feet hang down. When you drive and drag a riding lead, trying to turn a night stampede, if a bronco comes unwound, set and let your feet hang down. When you drive and drag, riding lead, trying to turn a night stampede, if a bronco comes unwound, just set and let your feet hang down.
Deep thanks go to both producer Nancy Roth and certainly to Bill Seams for his singing, his storytelling, and his editing of this material in creating this book. Once again, if you want to look up this book called Shorty's Yarns by Bruce Kiscadden, Kiscadden spelled K-I-S-K-A-D-D-O-N, published by Utah State University Press, with illustrations by Catherine Field. That's the Bookshelf. We'll have a little postscript to this in a certain way on Monday night by asking Dick Warwick to bring us another aspect of that genre, cowboy poetry.